Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Currie, I'm your presenter for Senior Focus today, and we have some very good news. We have got our funding to assist us to stay on air, and that strengthened our position, and so we're very delighted that the COVID-19 government community support has clicked in for us, and that means we can plan ahead. Now, with regards to the upcoming elections, it's quite a difficult time because a lot of planned meetings are not really going ahead because they can only have 10 people at this point. And I'm hoping that we can do a better job in giving you more information. It's complex this time because there's two referenda, and so far we have not done any programs around the referenda, including the euthanasia question. And both the referendas are different because the euthanasia one directly leads to a bill that's in the House, whereas the cannabis one is different because already medical cannabis is available, but this is a recreational cannabis for people over 20. And that one, there's no current legislation in the House. So whoever is elected into Parliament and has a majority, there will have to be some kind of bill drafted, and then that will go through select committee. And that will be another opportunity for people to give feedback to government before any bill actually passes in the House. So it's a sort of a two-step process with that one. So depending on what the country decides will depend on what type of a bill is drafted and what might be in that bill. So some of the concerns people have, like there isn't enough education focus for the community in the current plans, that could change quite dramatically on the basis of the feedback that both comes with the referendum and feedback that goes to select committee directly when there is a bill to be voted on. So in the House. So it's a two-step process where the aged care one, there's already been a lot of debate in Parliament. There's already a bill with clauses and so on that's been drafted and changed several times. And so it's a slightly different question. I hope that this information is helpful, and I hope that you have found the leaflets that the Electoral Commission has put out setting out the pros and cons of the vote in each case. I hope that you find those useful. Now, if you have moved into a retirement village recently and you've changed your address, you can still vote and you can cast a special vote and you can change your address details and actually vote on the day based on your new residential address as a special vote, and all can be done on the day. So there's no need to panic, there's no need to think you've missed out, and you can vote early, of course. And so voting, you know, will be happening quite soon. I think it may even start today when I'm making this program, which, of course, is in advance of you actually listening to the program. So I do think that people are going to be well catered for. If you are having any difficulties with your mobility and you can't get out to vote, somebody can deliver papers to you to your home, and that can be organised. So all you want to do is ring the Electoral Commission's 0800 number and let them know that you need this help. So that's all underway, and I think that probably it's going to be better organised than usual because of the extra complexities, the number of voting questions, the two referenda, and the fact that we're COVID related conditions slow things down, so more effort's gone in and more planning and preparation to make sure that it's safe for people. And those being trained to run the polling booths and so on, they've got training to step up. If it's level 2 or level 3, they will be able to make changes in their layout and how they run the booth. So it will be safe. And even with transfer of people collecting papers and so on at your home. It's all going to be safe. So that's important. It's important to know and realise that it's a formalised process and it's taken seriously, and it's very important that everybody gets a chance to have their say. So I really do urge you to think about the quality of people that are getting elected. You know, who do you want as your local representative? And recognise that you've got two ways of influencing. One is your party vote and one is your local representative. So you can exercise a strategy in how you vote and work out what's the likely consequences of your vote. So good luck with that. And this is the, when you are tuning into this program, it will be the tail end of Tongue and Language Week. So mana alele to our Tongan listeners, and I hope that you have heard a bit of Tongan language this week. And my delight is to hear Tongan choirs, and I will be going along to the Glen Innes Library this week just to participate in the Tongan Language Week activities that they have, simply because they do such a fantastic job with the Tongan community. Now, from the 14th of September for a week is Māori Language Week, and Te Reo has had a boost in recent times, but I can remember 30 years ago being an ambassador for the Tauruwhere, the Māori Language Commission, and back in the mid-1990s I was involved with two Ngāti Porou kuia, Uri Hapiti Walters and Mrs. Tinaku Portai, known as Mrs. Hat, who was a wonderful classroom teacher in Porirua, well known in the mainstream community, but was a bit of a legend in her own time, going to Runanga meetings, carting me along, and she was a granddaughter of the chief of Te Araroa. So these two women were fantastic in championing Pākehā who wanted to learn te reo, and they gave tremendous amount of support to extending biculturalism in the workplaces they were involved in. Uri Hapiti Walters was Cheryl Sutherland's right-hand woman when it came to bicultural matters, because she was the person on the spot they could refer to when they wanted advice on how to apply the treaty, whether it was in the way artefacts were displayed at Te Papa in the museum, or whether it was in greetings and visiting dignitaries and how ceremonies should be conducted and so on. It was all very much something that Uri Hapiti had huge input into. And I remember at nights she had access to taxi services 24/7 if she had to go into Te Papa for any reason. And sometimes the security people had issues. They would hear sounds coming, like water running in the toilets, or the lights would flicker, or there would be, you know, just strange things going on that didn't really make much sense on a logical, scientific evidence base. But clearly, to Uri Hapiti, these artefacts, carvings, waka, po, these large representatives of ancestors that were in the museum, were living treasures. And the spiritual energies they embodied, their concerns came out in terms of these kinds of happenings. So her job would be to calm everything down. She would know from the powerful karakia, the powerful chants of the past, she would know what was needed. And they would call her. She would go in by taxi and she would begin a process of communicating with these entities, these treasures in Te Papa. And she would calm the spirits down and she would draw on her ancestral knowledge of karakia to do this. And the lights would stop flickering, the noises would stop happening, and everything would settle down, and the security staff would not have the hairs on their head standing up or on their neck. They would be also calmed by this process. Now, it might sound quite unreal, but believe you me, it was very real to the people involved. And I used to learn a lot from Iri Hapiti through her storytelling and through her sharing of her experiences. And in the same way, Hine Tinaku Pōtai was an enormous mentor to me in terms of the many times that I walked behind her as she did the karanga onto different marae. I learned how in her calling and in her own whai kōrero, which she did when she was on the East Coast, as women are permitted to speak on marae there, she was very profound in some of the stories that she told and some of the references that she gave. But there would be reference to guardian spirits, to particular birds that were linked to particular hapu and iwi in locations we visited. There would be waiata chosen to represent the occasion that was fitting. Now, there was all sorts of things that all connected up, and so it was very powerful learning that was going on in all these situations. It was a great honour to be working biculturally in the mid-1990s at the time where the Renaissance of the Reo was very strong in Whanganui Atara in Wellington. The Māori radio station that got its first initial license, Tupuka Tuhika, was its name, and Hari Williams, who was has had a huge career in broadcasting, he was the leading light at that time. But there were people like Huarangi Waikere Puru, who's passed on and did so under the first lockdown. He was a great giant in terms of getting a share of the airwaves under the treaty for Māori to actually then start pushing to actually get the radio station and to get Māori television. So there were giants like these men who changed things for all time for the reo in this country. And so it's fitting in Māori Language Week that we actually think about. It was individuals that stood up and stood out and campaigned over many decades for some of the things that we now take for granted. And it's a beautiful language. It's a language that you can have a lot of fun with. And because it's repetitive, it's very attractive, particularly for children. I mean, there's lots of rhymes and games and things that are done using te reo, and it can be easy for people to tune in and pick up some of the repetition and some of the sounds, and therefore improve pronunciation without actually having to feel you're doing a lot of work. And thinking of the word or spider, because we do have, well, springtime coming, we have lots of cobwebs appearing in places and we need to get busy cleaning in springtime. And I encourage people to think about spiders when they're cleaning and think, yes, it's the punawiriwiri. Punawiriwiri is the Māori word for spider. Isn't it beautiful? Punawiriwiri. So that's something that we can tune into in Māori Language Week, is think about just adding one word a day even to your vocabulary, 7 words over the week. And if they stick and you can use them in sentences, in English sentences, you can develop this art of Māori language, where you're doing, in effect, Māori English or English Māori, and you're just sprinkling it into your life so that it's not something that's out there that you never do or never talk about or never interact with. And you can find that then you can just scale up from there. So one of my favourite callers, always when I'm calling him, he always answers the phone, tēnā koe. And he has a beautiful way of creating a warm feeling in the way he greets people on the phone. And he's been doing this for the last 10 years, and he came to a community Māori language class that I helped run, and he started just in a small way, and that was at 92. He'll be 100 next year, and there will be some Māori language involved in his 100th birthday celebration, for sure. And that's, you know, quite a delightful thing. So people are never too old to learn and never too old to give it a go and never too old to have fun, because that's what learning should be, any learning. It'll stick if it's fun, and you won't be disappointed, and you'll be amazed at how many rich conversations you can have just with a little bit of Māori sprinkled in them, and how much enjoyment and how many new doors open, how many smiles and how many people respond well. So it may not be something you've grown up with or something you've had a lot of access to, but there's a lot of resources out there now, and particularly in libraries, the librarians are very, very keen to help you search. So if you have connections within Māoridom that you're aware of somewhere back in the family, you want to search through ancestry records, you want to make contact with the Māori history of a particular area, you want to follow up place names, you know, your librarians are your first port of call in your local library, because you'd be really, really surprised what resources are there. Now, we're going to take a music break right now, and I have a Māori track, Hei Puti Puti Pai, for you, and after that, we will return and we will talk more about learning opportunities in our communities, and we'll talk more about some of the changes that are coming in, that have come about through treaty applications, through use of te reo, through Māori healing practices, through a lot of things that were just not on our horizon 10 years ago. So enjoy the music break.
He puti puti pai katohia, kia piri ki tōma e te tau. He tau aroha koe kua noho. Puti pai katohia, kia piri ki tō uma e te tau. He tau aroha koe kua nōra, kua ngaro i te
welcome back, everyone. And it's Māori Language Week this week, starting on the 14th of September. So I am wanting to just focus a little bit more on some of the changes that have come about. And so I started the program talking about the 1990s, where I was an ambassador for Te Tauru Whiri, the Māori Language Commission in Wellington. And at that time, very few Māori words were used in public life. I can recall some kuia, some older Māori woman, saying that they would never speak Māori in the street. You know, it was almost like people would stare at them or be rude to them or something. So they would never actually want to encourage that sort of bullying or attack type behaviour. So they would never speak te reo as they walked down the road. Now, at that time, with the Pākehā faith, despite having my own Māori connections with Ngāi Tahu, I wouldn't think twice about walking down the street and practicing. And in fact, I used to delight getting in a lift in Wellington and speaking te reo flat out to a mate. And I didn't care what sort of reaction I got. I was just determined to normalise the behaviour as much as possible. I really enjoyed ringing up Hare Williams on Te Upoko Tika and having a conversation in te reo. And I was a real baby at learning te reo in those days. I mean, I was really, very basic learning, but I would prepare what I was going to say in practice. And so when I rang up, it was kind of like pretty easy because I couldn't really get into too much trouble. Anyway, I can think of some funny conversations I had when the difference between shark and mountain wasn't made clear, and sometimes Hmong can be confused. But I had opportunities in the early 2000s to mentor some chief executives who wanted to improve their pronunciation, and we heard some strange things. I remember when Sir Peter Blake was opening the sales area downtown on the wharf by the events centre, one of the speakers got up and he referred to Ngāi Tahu instead of Ngāi Tahu, and that more or less came out like sounding a bit like, who the hell are you? So it just emphasised the ridiculousness of people trying to use te reo in public life, in a public context, when they were totally unaware of their pronunciation faux pas, and could be considered even insulting. And the fact that they never really bothered to get it right just upset me somewhat, because in France, for example, the French are very proud of their language, and they look very askance at people who mispronounce French. And I think of how effective people were in pronouncing key French names on the news, like Perpignan, when the Air New Zealand jet crashed into the ocean off the French coast. Perpignan was the largest urban centre closest to the crash. And every announcer got that perfectly right. Whereas we seldom would get perfection when it came to any local Māori names that were more than four syllables long. I would see and hear people trip up, and particularly the vowels. They, you know, the AU is O, not owl. And so maunga, you know, it's just, it sounds, it's so twangy and it's so unnecessary. Maunga. So maunga. I noticed in Mount Roskill, where there's an important stream that's linked to Oakley. It's part of Oakley Creek, but its Māori name, Te Aanga, people just get really stuck on it. They just don't seem to manage it. But it's the AU sound doubled, so it's said twice in the name, and that just seems to throw them. So whatever it is, just get hold of some learning devices, like online. You've got Māori dictionaries you can consult. You can actually get the pronunciation correct, because there's an auditory version you can get, so you can listen to the sound correctly, and you can repeat and repeat and repeat until you can just get it. And there isn't really any reason for people to bastardise the language or to avoid saying it. So see what you can do at making a shift and have some fun. And, yeah, we'd be really interested to know of anybody who's doing anything really exciting in this area. Now, you can always write in. You can write in to me, Anne-Marie Currie. That's A-N-N-E-M-A-R-I-E dot Currie, C-O-U-R-Y, at gmail.com. So you can always write in to me. And you can also listen to our programs online. So you can, if you like a program and you want other people to hear it, you want to tell your friends about it, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz, and under programs you will find Senior Focus. And so you can re-listen to programs, and you can, as I say, pass on this information to friends and encourage them to listen as well. Now, I did say that I'd mention about some of the changes that have come about since the Māori language has become a more actively used and embodied communication process in our world, in New Zealand, in Aotearoa. And particular healing clinics work spiritually. When I was referring to the spiritual energies in the treasures held in Te Papa, there is a link there too to the healing work that's done in these clinics, because it's recognised that there is powerful energy behind words, and words from ancient karakia can be very healing, and they can uplift people, and they can strengthen people energetically, whether they're fighting cancer or whether they're dealing with COVID or breathing issues or mobility issues. And we now know that the brain can regrow cells. We now know that even bones can regrow and muscle tissue. And there's an enormous amount about what can be actually achieved through the spiritual elements of healing, in association, of course, with medical evidence and other forms of mainstream intervention. And Māori clinics on site on Marae actually give people access to a whole range of things in addition to the formal medical mainstream model. And I think that that's all come about since the treaty applications have been applied, and since Māori have more access to information channels like radio and television in their own language. So it's a great week, it's a great time to celebrate, and farewell for now, and ka nui te rā, have a great day. And we hope you'll be with us next time, and we will talk more about the elections. Bye for now. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.com.
www.senior-focus.org.nz/senior-focus, and do note Senior Focus is